Our day after the election coverage continues now. We will speak with four different guests during this hour, coming from different perspectives. We have guests who are experts on the economy, on immigration, on foreign policy, and the Supreme Court. And we will get their reactions to our election news from early this morning. Donald Trump is president-elect of the United States. And we are welcoming your reactions, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So what will a president-elect Donald Trump and his administration do? What are your hopes or what are your fears? We welcome your questions and your reactions, and we will be fitting in as many of your comments as possible during this hour. By the way, Hillary Clinton was to speak at 8:30 this morning. That was what I mentioned last hour. However, it looks like that has been moved back, and she will be speaking at 9:30 Central Time. So we will be bringing you that those comments when they come. But that's it's different than what was originally planned. Donald Trump gave his victory speech last night. Hillary Clinton had called him to congratulate him on his win, but she did not give any remarks last night. She will be giving those this morning. Okay, well, let's talk about what happens now. Earlier this morning, stock futures were down sharply but partly recovered from their prior lows as Donald Trump pulled off that upset victory over Hillary Clinton. So what happens to the economy? Let's ask our guest. Brian Jacobson is an associate professor of business administration at Wisconsin Lutheran College in Milwaukee and chief portfolio strategist at Wells Fargo Funds, LLC. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on such an exciting day here.
Oh, really exciting and very surprising to many. As an economic analyst, what is your reaction to the presidential election?
Yes, well, at first it was kind of shock, and then it was kind of standing in awe. I was up watching the market reaction, and you had mentioned about how stock futures performed last night, but it was across the board. It was kind of what we would call a classic risk-off move with the financial markets, where you saw equity markets, so stock markets, drop. You saw treasury yields, so safe haven assets, kind of go up in value, gold go up in value. But then suddenly, when President-elect Trump began delivering his victory speech, things turned a little bit, at least. Didn't turn very much for Mexico, unfortunately, but it certainly turned for the U.S. markets and also for the Treasury markets, where he came across with a message where he tried to emphasize, it seemed, more a conciliatory tone, building bridges maybe more than walls. And given that he didn't bring up two of the things that he mentioned on the campaign trail, the tariffs that he has threatened to impose on like China and Mexico, and then also building the wall along the border and with immigration, the markets kind of rebounded from there. I think with the expectation that maybe a lot of what he said about those two key issues with trade and with immigration may have been more campaign bluster as opposed to actual policies that he's going to pursue.
Oh, well, won't the anyway, I was going to say, won't the working class that helped elect him be mad if he doesn't do anything about the trade policies that they think took their jobs overseas?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And that's why I'm not saying that he's going to abandon them. I just think he's going to moderate those views a little bit. And, in fact, he would probably have to. With a Republican-controlled Senate and a Republican-controlled House, in order to get any legislation through, it has to originate there, in the legislative branch. And he does have certain, or he will have certain authority as the president to perhaps, you know, unilaterally impose certain tariffs within certain bounds. But in order to actually affect trade policy and the such, I think it's going to have to be a little bit more moderate relative to what he really campaigned on. But you're absolutely right. He will probably have to make good on those promises to an extent. And the real question right now, and I think that's why you still see the stock market, it hasn't quite opened yet. We're about 15 minutes away from the opening bell, but that's why I think that you see the market is still down a little bit, but not nearly as much as what it was at around, say, midnight or 1 a.m. our time.
Yeah. Well, what's your prediction, Brian, when it comes to that? We'll see some fluctuation, but we're not going to have some sort of major global economic collapse. What's going to happen?
Now, I think that the worst case scenario would be if he actually went and decided on like day one of his presidency to actually, you know, impose tariffs on Mexico and China without consulting Congress or without actually, you know, going through different steps, because that would, I think, trigger retaliatory tariffs. The danger that China would then impose tariffs on U.S. goods, and U.S. manufacturers do export quite a bit to China, or Mexico could impose tariffs on U.S. goods, and so you could trigger a trade war, and that's not exactly a formula for economic growth. So I think that there are better channels to go through the World Trade Organization. I think that one of the trade deals that President Obama has been trying to champion, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which was a bigger free trade deal with a lot of the Asian economies, that's effectively dead in the water now with Trump becoming the president-elect. So I think that this is a slight step back for global growth in the short term in terms of with global trade, but we'll have to see what other policies also emerge from the unified government now. Let's face it, over the last few years, it's been very difficult for President Obama to get anything enacted. It's been very difficult for a Republican-controlled Senate and House to get anything past the veto pen of the president as well. So not much has really gotten done. So we'll have to see exactly what sort of policies are forthcoming, especially as it relates to tax reform. That's probably some low-hanging fruit and some infrastructure spending. That seems to be a high-priority item for the president-elect.
Yeah, he made that a point in his speech. But let's take some calls that have the economy related to them. Dave in Green Bay. Hi, Dave.
How are you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
My comment is I'm hoping that now something will happen with the health care that he's talking about, because you want to help the economy. There's hundreds of thousands of people out there who want to retire, and they just can't retire because of the high cost of insurance. So maybe if something's done that way, that'll open up how many jobs? I mean, a lot.
Yeah. All right. So repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, and Trump is promising to do that as quickly as possible. Brian, how does that affect the economy?
Well, I think that we have to see exactly what it's replaced with. Right. The Affordable Care Act right now is a known commodity. There was, I think, a lot of backlash from the public as far as with the most recent increases in premiums. And as he points out, you know, it is very, some people might feel like they're kind of shackled to their jobs because they can't afford to retire, despite there being the safety net of Medicare. That safety net apparently has, you know, too many holes, and sometimes it can be too expensive for many people. And so a solution, I think, does need to be proposed, but I haven't seen anything as far as what they would actually be proposing. So it's really difficult to say exactly what they would replace it with. And that's been one of my criticisms of both candidates throughout this presidential election, is that it seemed like they had a laundry list of ideas that they wanted to pursue, but it was mainly just a list. There wasn't really a lot of depth to it as far as the specifics around it where you could actually analyze what would be the economic consequences of these various proposals. So, unfortunately, we're sort of in this let's wait and see sort of mode.
Let's go to Janice in La Crosse next. Hello, Janice.
Yes, hello, Joy, and your guests. Ha! Hallelujah! I'm so excited. Thank you, Lord. I'm so happy. Thank you, thank you, thank you, God. Anyways, thank you, Joy. I mean, now we're going to get something done. Now we're going to have some leadership. He's a businessman. He's going to bring people to the table. He's going to make some decisions. He's going to get people together, and we're going to move forward. And, you know, there's so many things on the table. Like they say, get rid of Obamacare, you know, get defund Planned Parenthood. Let's get things moving here, you know, infrastructure. Get private business back in here. Let's have some competition. Let's get this place rolling in, not this doggone handout government stuff that everybody's like, blotto.
Yeah, Janice, she told us how she felt, Brian Jacobson.
It was very interesting with President-elect Trump's victory speech. He made reference to the forgotten man. And I thought that was a really interesting reference that he made because that actually comes from Franklin Delano Roosevelt from some debates that he participated in. It was from William Graham Sumner's book, The Forgotten Man. And he talked about how the forgotten man is the person who pays, is the forgotten man is the person who prays, the forgotten man is the one who is not thought of. And I think that he was really trying to, you know, his Make America Great Again theme was really, that was borrowed from Ronald Reagan's campaign. And now this forgotten man theme was almost like borrowed from Franklin Delano Roosevelt, a Democrat. So it's going to be very interesting to see what sort of mix of policies he is indeed going to be pursuing.
Can you react a little bit to we elected a businessman and he's gonna do some deals and bring people around the table and I mean will his business background be a positive thing for our economy?
I think that it certainly could be. You know, business experience does a lot, but so does public service experience. So does military experience. So does any type of experience. You know, there's always the difference in perspective that your personal experience can bring to the table. I think that can help. Oftentimes, when we look at, say, emerging market economies, take Argentina, for example. They recently elected a new president who has a lot of business experience, and most people cheered that sort of development. But then in other instances, you have people with business experience who don't necessarily have the political experience to know how the sausage gets made. But that's why I think that President-elect Trump we'll have to see who is in his cabinet, who does he surround himself with to maybe make up for some of the shortcomings. So one of his strengths could be the business experience. One of the weaknesses could be the lack of public policy experience as far as just how do things actually get done.
Yes.
So between now and Inauguration Day, we're going to be learning a lot more about who's going to be making up his cabinet, and we'll have to kind of maybe revisit this topic at that point.
We will. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Brian Jacobson is an associate professor of business administration at Wisconsin Lutheran College in Milwaukee and chief portfolio strategist at Wells Fargo Funds, LLC. We will take a short break, and then when we come back, we'll welcome your reaction to the election results. President-elect Donald Trump in a stunning, some say, upset over Hillary Clinton. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll talk some about the future of immigration reform after this. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Donald Trump's tough talk about Latinos and African Americans failed to send enough voters in these groups into the arms of Hillary Clinton. According to a report, some 88% of black voters supported Clinton versus 8% for Trump. While that's a large margin, it's not as big as President Barack Obama's victory over Mitt Romney in 2012. Meanwhile, only 65% of Latinos supported Hillary Clinton, while 29% cast their votes for Donald Trump. In 2012, President Obama won 71% of the Hispanic vote, while Romney secured 27%. So we'll talk some about the Latino vote and the future of immigration and continue to welcome your thoughts and questions. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next guest is Christine Newman Ortiz, the founding executive director of the Milwaukee-based group Voces de la Frontera Action. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's your reaction to the presidential election?
I think in some ways it's not surprising. I did expect it at least to go in the Hillary Clinton direction. But having said that, clearly knowing that this was a very tight race, and that's what throughout this whole election has been so disturbing. I mean, I understood the primary, the nature of the primary elections and how unrepresentative the political districts are because of gerrymandering. But in terms of the general election, to me, in terms of the canvassing that I was doing in working-class neighborhoods, obviously talking to mostly Latino voters, but also talking to other voters, white workers, African-American voters, I will say that I think, you know, in how the question interview was even framed at the beginning, I think to me, I think there's a, more than anything, what I was struck by is that for a lot of leading up to the elections and now seeing the results, it kind of reaffirms it, that I think there's a lot of white working people that, as we know, have been affected by, you know, these trade agreements, like other workers, have, you know, are working paycheck to paycheck, and with the decimation of traditional labor unions, you know, they've, and you have a rural area as well that people are really suffering and they're looking for answers. I think they're not going to get those answers from Donald Trump. And I think it's I think that it's a very different political landscape that we're living in now. And I think our responsibility as an organization that largely, you know, fights for all working people, but obviously has a very large constituency that's Latino and immigrant, our responsibility is to really engage people in conversations so that, you know, so that people can air out how they're feeling. And we don't want people to like freak out.
I was going to say, how do you suspect, what is the reaction in Milwaukee's, Latino community to the election results as far as you can tell?
Well, I mean, I think in Wisconsin, even though we don't have the numbers yet, I think, you know, we had very positive responses in, like, the 50 wards that we worked in that have large concentrations of Latino voters. So I think our, you know, in terms of people and broadly recognizing that, you know, Trump is someone who is offensive, insulting, threatening, and, you know, I think people did step up. In terms of the elections, we'll concretize that. But from what we saw, early voting was up 300% in those wards, historic turnout. Over 4 years ago, we saw, you know, and there was polled Latino decisions, which is a very sophisticated, accurate pollster, interviewed Latino voters here in Wisconsin for the first time ever. And it kind of correlated with some of the preliminary numbers we're seeing about like 81% and at least in those wards where the highest concentration are of people supporting Hillary Clinton over Trump, precisely, and Johnson, I mean, Feingold over Johnson, a little bit lesser numbers, but still in a clear majority, you know, in the 70s, because they, you know, they recognized the kind of anti-immigrant racist policies that are being promoted and you know, we're rejecting that. Yeah. So I think the reaction. So I think nationally, people recognize that. I think it is. It is. You know, there has been demographic shifts in this country, and there's economic insecurity. We saw a very polarized situation. So I think, you know, there's definitely concern about the future, and you know, we in anticipation of that, you know, we definitely made a commitment to organize some forums to bring people together so that people are not also well, we're overreacting in terms of where we are at now. But do I think there is a change in the political landscape? Yes, I do. Yeah. And I think people need to prepare for that. People need to unite. I think unity is extremely important. I think and we need to the biggest thing, I think, is that people voted – the white Wolverine people will voted for, and some Latinos and people of color, the smaller percentage. And I think there's going to be a disenchantment with what Trump is going to offer, because Trump is going to go offer what little is left in terms of workers' rights.
Yeah.
He does not support a minimum wage, kind of did later, but the kind of things that we're going to see are definitely, I think, going to shake things up. And I think it's very critical that different groups that are going to be impacted, which includes working people, certainly labor folks, that we really unite, and that's another level of organizing. But quick organizing is going to be required.
What do you think that comprehensive immigration reform at a national level, which would include a pathway to citizenship, is history now, or what do you think is the future of immigration reform?
Well, I definitely never think it's history. History is long. But I think... I do believe we're in a period of where we have to, we don't want to overreact right away, but I think we do have to draw lines in the sand in terms of saying that we're not going to, we're going to defend, we're going to defend what the years of struggle that have, for instance, brought about deferred action for Dreamers. When Trump gave his immigration speech, he talked about, this was obviously written for him, about the kind of administrative changes that a president could do, that the movement had won under the Obama administration, under pressure. And one of those things that he had promised to do is to repeal deferred action for Dreamers, which is a temporary protected status. I think his first day in office. The other thing is dismantling the new enforcement priorities that were established at different levels at counties and then finally at the national level in November of 2014. It's one of the things that we're holding Sheriff Clark accountable to, like if he's actually complying in part of an open records lawsuit we have. And what that says is that the government, can't just, have people brought in because of a minor traffic infraction or because you're accused of something that you're innocent of and be put into the kind of the county jail process through a county jail and then be just handed over to immigration. And that was part of what has led to historic deportations under Bush and then later under the Obama administration. And that was finally put in check because of the immigrant rights movement and demands around decriminalization. And so I think those are some of the things that I think will be, I think they're going to go after working people in terms of the basic rights they have, the living standards they have, and they're going to, potentially do this as well. And I think, like, for obviously the religious community within the Muslim community, there's been a lot of threats directed. I think, there's been a destabilization right now of global markets, and I think there is a wild card out there. I think it'd be crazy not. We've gone through this merry-go-round of an election. It'd be crazy not to think that that's going to get reflected within the national politics, and I think it's going to become very polarizing.
Yeah, you mentioned we must unify as we let you go. What do you mean by we must unite? How does that happen?
I think that one is that. This wasn't like a watershed election where there's obviously it does represent, it was a very tight race, and I think there's a lot of false hope that's been placed on. So I think part of it is there needs to be a regrouping for the people of good consciousness, people who stand for against the kind of offensive rhetoric and the extreme proposals that he's presented. I think there needs to be a regrouping of people to really kind of process. And I think people we do need that layer of alliances that need to be built against the potential for some escalated attacks on working people and people of color, women, and I think that's all very, very real. And so I think, but we can't win that alone. And I think we have to appeal to the best in others, and there needs to be some serious escalated on-the-ground organizing to really push back against some of the proposals that are coming.
Thank you so much for being with us. Christine Newman-Ortiz, founding executive director of the Milwaukee-based group Voces de la Frontera. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show if you'd like to react to the election results. Donald Trump is president-elect of the United States. Wisconsin, by the way, was a key state that put him over the edge early this morning. Wisconsin voted Republican for the first time in a presidential race since 1984. Wisconsin voters also reelected Republican Senator Ron Johnson over Democratic challenger Russ Feingold. Republican Mike Gallagher defeated Democrat Tom Nelson in Wisconsin's only open congressional seat. Wisconsin Republicans also made gains in the state legislature, and Congress held on to its Republican majority. What do you think of all that? Let's take a call from Alex in Shawano. Hi, Alex.
Hello. I'm looking at the results in the paper this morning, and I looked at the independent candidates, Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. These Trump people think they got such a great victory. If you give the independent votes to Hillary, she would have won by a landslide, almost 2-1. Those independents took away 68 electoral college votes away from the election.
All right. So if all the Stein and Johnson voters would have voted for Hillary, she would have won. But is that realistic to think they all would have?
No, but it kind of puts a little dent in the Trump victory.
I think. All right. Thank you for pointing that out. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We will move on to another guest now as we are talking with a wide variety of guests about the election results and focusing in on some key areas. Now we'll take a look at foreign policy and maybe a little national security as well with our guest Dale Hirspring, a distinguished emeritus professor of political science at Kansas State University, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He served in the U.S. State Department's Foreign Service and in the U.S. Navy and has written 14 books and numerous articles. We'll ask him about foreign policy under a Trump administration. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us. Well, from a foreign policy perspective, do you think the U.S. is better off or worse off or the same under a President Trump?
Well, first of all, I mean, I think the European reaction, I go through about 12 papers a day. So I got up this morning and I wanted to look and see sort of how they were reacting. And I think the ultimate comes from an Irish newspaper, the Irish Times. The United Hates of America has raised its middle finger to the world. I mean, I could go through German, I go through the rest. The fact is, the Europeans are in total shock. And that includes the Canadians. They didn't predict this. They didn't think this was even possible. So I think what this means in the United States is a tremendous opening to set up things the way we want to set them up. And that depends upon what kind of a foreign policy our new president is going to lay out, and I would bet that I don't think anybody can predict that because I don't think anybody knows what he specifically wants in terms of policies. He's going to have to reassure the Europeans. He's going to have to make it clear that he wants to listen to them. Putin came through saying that, you know, when he wants to do something to improve relations with the typical Russian sort of thing, but of course it's all your fault, not ours. But all the way across that, you know, when I started looking through reading the German one, no reason for hope. Well, let's give them a reason for hope. And some of the comments unstated disaster.
Yeah. So Europe was shocked. What about groups like ISIS? How is ISIS going to respond to a president-elect Trump?
I think they're going to be scared to death of him.
Why?
They don't know because the way he's talked. I mean, they know pretty well they're already having trouble with the our decision to unleash air power. Now, if he comes and starts sending in the Marines or something, they're going to have to take up residence elsewhere. If he makes the decision to put boots on the ground in a significant, serious way, they're over very quickly. Now, it doesn't mean that they're gone. Obviously, they'll move elsewhere and they'll start doing, attacks in other cities and sort of in places. But I think they're probably scared, particularly unless they want to commit suicide, in which case that's fine. They'll be getting some help.
Yeah. Well, Donald Trump famously wanted to bomb the blank out of them. What do you see happening with under a Trump administration? Do you see boots on the ground? An escalation of air?
What I see him doing, what I think is the most important thing for him in almost every space, except trade and something, and that is his advisors. And it's very important that he gets good advisors, because I think in this issue, the important thing is going to be what the generals recommend, why they recommend them, how well thought out their ideas are, and I think he's more than likely to follow them than he is to do as Obama does, which is follow his own sort of feeling as to what he should do. I think that this guy's going to call in his generals and say, now what do I have to do to win this thing? Because that's what he wants to do. He wants to win it and get over with.
Donald Trump said earlier that he would consider meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin before being sworn in. Is that something you would encourage him to do?
Sure.
Why?
Provided that Obama plays along and Obama encourages it. And, I mean, I wouldn't do it behind Obama's back. I think that would be stupid. But I think if Obama uses his head and says, you know, sure, I encourage him to go ahead. They can't make any decisions until I'm out of office. But this, why not get started and start talking about it and seeing how they fit out? But it would be the kind of thing where they met but didn't make any decisions.
Yeah. What was your reaction when Trump was saying that he knew more than the generals and the military when it came to fighting
stupid.
ISIS?
It's plain stupid. He made a lot of stupid comments. I think finally somebody got him in a closet and said, look, you've got to start acting like you're an adult, not babble this kind of nonsense. And I think he did the last, I don't know, I can't count, but for 4 to 6 weeks, he started acting like an adult, like somebody who's had some experience in politics, he's avoided some of those kind of ridiculous statements that he made, about 3 or 4 months ago.
Let's take a call from Tamar from Wilson. Good morning.
Hi, Joy. Glad to be on the air.
Yeah, what is your thought or comment?
I kind of fear for the country in terms of Trump having the codes for the nuclear arms. He does have a bit of a volatile and impulsive personality, and I'm afraid that something will tip him off and nuclear war might break out.
Professor Hirschsprung, do you have any qualms about his volatile personality and having the nuclear codes?
Well, let me say this. I have been in that system. I have worked on nuclear weapons and spent most of my life in political military work in the State Department, so I know how the system works. It's not so simple that he can just go say, go bomb him. There's a whole process, a whole procedure, and I think that once he gets himself hooked into the system and understands how it works, he's going to realize that, first of all, that what he was thinking of doing is a whole hell of a lot more dangerous and cataclysmic than he thinks it is. And I think that he'll sit back and he's got generals there. He's got a 3-star who knows exactly what's going to happen, what might happen, and how. So am I sort of real deeply sort of worried that he might be too impulsive? Yes, I guess like everybody else, like your speaker, I sort of am. But on the other hand, I'm hopeful that the advisors and the system, the way it's set up, will make that less of a problem than people think it is.
Last night, Donald Trump said in his victory speech that we are going to have great relations with countries all over the world, those countries that want to have great relations with us. Do you have any Any doubt that that we're going to have improved foreign relations?
Well, right now, as I mentioned earlier, I think everybody is sitting on the edge of their seats to try and wait and see. And it's always going to depend a lot on us. It depends on what kind of an olive branch he puts out. He's got a contradiction in the sense that he wants to make America stronger and make America the primary vehicle. Well, that's not going to make Mexicans or Canadians or Chinese or Russians happy. So the question becomes, how can he make the United States the kind of strong, almost autonomous country he wants it to be, and still have good relations with other countries? That's what has them scared and has them worried, because they understand the relationship of power. They can't stand it against the United States. What are the Canadians to do? Their economy collapses if the United States doesn't work well and closely with them, as does the Mexican. So he's got to figure out a way to try and get industry back into the United States without at the same time destroying Canadian or Mexican or whoever else's industry.
Thank you very much for being with us. Dale Hirschspring, Distinguished Emeritus Professor of Political Science at Kansas State University and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the U.S. Supreme Court under a Trump administration, and we will continue to take your general reactions to yesterday's election results. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. What are your hopes and fears now that we have elected Donald Trump, the 45th president of the United States? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We have been getting a reaction all morning long from different political analysts and commentators and experts, and we continue to do so. So far this hour, we've talked about the economy, we've talked about immigration, we talked about foreign policy under a Trump administration. Now we'll talk some about the courts and the U.S. Supreme Court. With our guest Ryan Owens, a professor of political science and an honorary fellow for the Institute of Legal Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's an expert on the U.S. Supreme Court, constitutional law, and judicial politics. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right. Well, I guess as somebody who studies the courts, what's your reaction to the election of Donald Trump?
Well, it's going to protect the conservative majority that we've seen in the court for the last couple of decades. I think at this point now, with the Republicans holding on to the Senate and with the Republican, President Trump coming in, that Scalia vacancy will be replaced with likely a pretty conservative justice. And frankly, if you look at the age of the other justices on the court right now, there's a not insignificant probability that he'll have another vacancy or two to fill.
Yeah. And do you think it's fair to say that Republicans came home to Trump in part because of the issue of Supreme Court nominees?
Yeah, I think that's probably right. I think one of the most important things to the Republican electorate was the Supreme Court. I mean, one of the things that we know from, for example, behavioral economics research is that people are more concerned about loss than they are about gain. And so I think for Republicans who have had a fairly conservative, a moderately conservative Supreme Court over the last, 20, 30, 40 years, the possible loss of that is more motivating than the gain on the other side for a potentially liberal court.
Yeah. So talk just some about how important an issue this is. It likely played a role in the election yesterday, but if Donald Trump can not only appoint one, but maybe two or maybe three Supreme Court justices, what does that mean for policy in the United States?
Sure. Well, I guess first off, if you just look at some of these folks, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is 83 years old. She doesn't have a history of great health. I suspect that she's going to do everything she can so as to not, leave the court voluntarily or otherwise over the next 4 years. Anthony Kennedy is 80. Stephen Breyer is 78. I think these three are the first ones we would consider to be departing the court. In terms of policy, though, I mean, I think we're likely to see fewer challenges to Obamacare simply because I think the Congress and the President will repeal and replace Obamacare. The immigration cases that we've seen, I suspect those will evaporate as well, as President Trump will use the same sort of executive authority to undo the President's immigration policies that, you know, that Obama had used to try to implement them.
Yeah. In addition to Supreme Court justices, the president also gets to appoint federal judges. How significant is that power?
It's pretty significant. I think, as most people may know, getting your case heard at the Supreme Court is really, really difficult. So for all purposes, the buck really stops at the Circuit Court of Appeals in this country. So having the ability to fill all of those vacancies, you know, now he's going to have a Senate that's controlled by Republicans as well. He will have the ability to sort of stack that judiciary for 4 years.
Yeah. I mean, what do you expect to see happen with in regard to the Supreme Court and federal courts over the next 4 years?
Well, I mean, obviously the big thing is just, filling the vacancy. And I suspect if I were advising him, I mean, I would take a look at a couple of people in particular, some of whom he's already mentioned. But Diane Sykes, I think she's got to be really high on the list right now. She's 58. She's a pretty well-known and conservative judge from the Seventh Circuit. She lives in Wisconsin. So I think that would be a good pick for him to try to solidify, some of his priorities. You also look at people like Allison Eyde from Colorado. She's 51. She comes from the state Supreme Court. And that's, we don't have anybody on the Supreme Court right now who actually came from a state Supreme Court. And I think that kind of diversity actually would be pretty good for the court today.
Yeah. You mentioned that we're going to have fewer challenges of Obamacare because the administration is likely to repeal the Affordable Care Act and immigration, fewer cases along those lines. What might President Trump, though, and his Supreme Court nominees mean for issues like, for example, Roe versus Wade?
That's less clear. I mean, one thing that we know or think we know about Donald Trump is he's not particularly socially conservative. I mean, I know he's made some comments about Roe versus Wade, but on some of these big issues, though, like gay rights and others, he's fairly liberal on them. So I'm not sure that I see him going hard right for a socially conservative judge or justice. He may want to do that with one of these picks to try to solidify the base a little bit, but I don't really see that being as motivational as maybe some other things could be, just in terms of, their overall judicial principles.
Yeah, he did make comments that were neutral when it came to gay marriage. In fact, even sounded like he was somewhat in support. The gay marriage was just legalized. Is that under any threat now?
Nobody wants to say, never, but I suspect not. He doesn't seem to be the person who's really motivated by that. If you look at his speech at the Republican National Convention, he spoke a lot about, or at least a little bit about gay rights. I don't suspect that he's going to be motivated to pick judges who are strongly opposed to that. I know that some of the folks on his list that he prepared have spoken out against it, but we'll have to see. I don't think, though, that that's going to be a priority for him, is to pick somebody who targets that particular issue.
Yeah. So any other takeaways from this election from your standpoint?
Well, it makes Mitch McConnell look like a genius, in terms of just, holding off on this. But, looking at the election returns last night, I mean, the thing that I notice about it is, People are just not satisfied with what's going on anywhere. And, you know, they'll even take a messenger like Donald Trump, who had lots of positives, many negatives. But, you know, they're even willing to, you know, to take a flawed messenger because they want somebody different. So I think that message will resonate with him. I think we might see that to some degree in the people that he puts on the federal courts.
Thank you very much for being with us.
You bet.
Ryan Owens, professor of political science and an honorary fellow for the Institute of Legal Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Okay, the remaining moments for your reactions and your thoughts on this morning after. 1-800-642-1234. Scott in Melrose, what do you think?
Good morning, Joy. Great honor to be on your show this morning. What I would like to say is... from the reaction that I'm seeing from the newspapers and the news and Facebook and even callers from your show, I think it's safe to say the most common emotion right now is fear. And I'm afraid the fear is maybe misplaced. People are scared that, you know, Trump might go off the deep end and start dropping nukes on people. Start deporting all kinds of immigrants. And none of this can really happen without support of his government. But I think what people are more fearful of is change. People have gone complacent with, you know, big government, big regulations, over taxation, and people have just learned how to live with that. And I think people are just more scared of big change than anything.
Thank you, Scott. Barbara in Central Wisconsin, what are your thoughts?
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. My thoughts are a question basically to your guest this morning, because during the campaign, I've been struck so much by the tone and the rhetoric and the parallels that it's had to Germany in the 30s and the promise of a new savior to all the problems that Germany had, and with the dysfunction that they were having with the economy and people wanting anybody that was different, and how Hitler used the hate and that he was the only one that could do it for him. And the rhetoric and the tone of the speeches that I heard coming were so much like what you see Hitler doing then.
I'm going to jump in, Barbara, because we're almost out of time and I don't have a guest anymore. This is just your thoughts following the election result. And I have just one more minute. Thank you for calling. Stephen in Madison is probably going to be our last caller. Briefly, Stephen, what did you want to say?
I had a different question. I wanted to say that this loss rests squarely on the Democratic National Committee, the party, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz. People don't like corruption, but really what I want to say, if this is the last thought, is that we have nothing to fear but fear itself. And this, I think the earlier caller is right, that people are afraid, and we do not need to be afraid. And if you feel afraid right now, you need to take a step back and evaluate what's most important and what's close to you, your family and your friends and your community. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. Fear is the mind killer.
Thank you very much to Stephen. We will leave it there. We'll talk more in the days to come about the election results and what happens now. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Brianne Shasso and to Nyasia Ellison for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.